Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
Whoa, what's up, world? It's Mandy Fresh, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Brooklyn. And today I'm joined by Tristan Willey, the bar manager at Booker and Dax, the incredible bar inside of Momofuku Sambar. Tristan, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Helen.
So for listeners outside of the New York City area, can you describe what style of cocktails you're making?
Yeah, I mean, they're fairly straightforward. A lot of people get caught up in what we do, which is technology. With the focus of creating better tools to use in a bar, but really they're straightforward cocktails. Especially cocktail bar, we do that, and of course pork buns, and all the favorites from the Momofuku family. But honestly, it's just an all around, you know, easy to get into pub kind of feeling cocktail bar.
So you make some, you do make pretty crazy drinks though. Let's be real.
I mean, there's some smoke. There's some fire.
There's hot pokers.
Yes, we have a hot poker. We do tend to shoot 2 feet of flame out from behind the bar occasionally.
It's an event, you know, sometimes, but yes. Right. So, you know, you're making these things with the lovely Dave Arnold, fellow Heritage Radio Network host. And, can you describe some of the ways in which you're using technology in these drinks?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot. Everything, we're trying to identify where we can make the process easier, better, more efficient, and create better ingredients rather than change the whole, you know, wheel here around of cocktails. So first, you know, you got to realize that we're still putting out 3-ingredient cocktails. A lot of our drinks that we have on the menu are fairly limited. I mean, they're just a nice simple sour, but the method we use to get there is allowing us to pull different flavors in. So we use a lot of liquid nitrogen, so we can powderize herbs with it. Like, we have a drink called the Basil Bixby, which we take basil and literally freeze it in liquid nitrogen until we can powderize it with a muddler, which lets us infuse it into alcohol almost instantaneously. And you have like this pesto, not pesto, but, you know, fresh herbal drink that you can consume like nothing. And it, you know, the show is not the purpose, but it looks cool to have the plumes of liquid nitrogen smoke having it. We have that. We carbonate everything we can get our hands on. We're using right now, my favorite thing at the bar is a centrifuge, which allows us to make, you know, whatever. I put anything and everything in there just to see what comes out. Right now it's like orgeats, and we can take the oils out of any kind of nuts and olives and that kind of thing. But whenever we get a fresh ingredient, we spin it, see what comes out. But yeah, it's fun.
Are you going to the farmer's market to kind of get inspiration?
Oh, always. I'm literally scheduled on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We have myself or Dave or a manager swing through there just to see what we can play with, what's fresh. We try and keep it local, fresh. You know, it just tastes better. No matter what, that's always going to be the truth. So we spend a fair amount of time walking through.
What are you psyched about right now at the farmer's market?
Well, we do apples. You know, it's Big Apple. We have, New York has such an awesome variety of apples always available through this season. So, and a lot of them only last for a week at a time. So we work through these week-long drinks, and we put them down on just, you know, just spectacularly different apples. We take them, we blend them, we juice them, we spin them. whatever we can find. And you go back to the farmer's market the next time, and it's a whole new set. And so they're all such different flavors that we're just jazzed. We're rotating through as much as we can and trying to stay fresh.
So I want to get into how you first started at Booker and Dax, and also just your history. How did you get to New York and become a killer bartender?
It's been an interesting road. I didn't come out here even to bartend. I mean, I've been in food industry since, you know, everybody is right out of high school, and you need to pay for college. You end up busing, serving, bartending, that kind of thing. And I started that back in New Mexico. Then ended up moving to New York to actually run a chain of running stores, which after a while of doing that, decided this is not the nightlife or fun I was looking for in New York City, and ended up trying to find my way back into food service. Wandered into Criff Dogs after a night of drinking at PDT and went, hey, I need a job and I want to work here. And they were like, can you manage? And I was like, yep. And it was sucked right back in. You know, and seeing those guys work all the time and being hand-to-hand, that was just an addiction. Until finally I was like, I need to be on the spirit side of things. It's time. It's been calling me forever. And I know we talked about this a little bit, but I have an addiction to single malts. And I was fantasized for years to be on the Scottish coast, being that old little man tending his barrels at his distillery, just being like, come on, guys, do your thing, and make sure that they're guarded for their years that they hang out there. So my first step, I thought, was to go to a distillery. We found a little distillery just opening, starting the gates in New York, called the Kings County Distillery. And we was stuck in this little tiny loft in the middle of Bushwick, not far from where we are, in a shady little corner of
really shady
the warehouse district. And said, hey, I want to do this. And they were just eager for help and so ready to teach all about what they were doing. And I jumped on board and just for over a year just ate it up as much as I can.
Yeah, so you were making bourbon and moonshine, and you know, you'd probably go home smelling like booze, right?
Yeah.
That corn mash. How would you describe for listeners? I mean, when you walk into Kings County Distillery, the scent in there is unlike any other scent.
Ah, man, it took me a while to get used to. You walk in, you're like, this is a barn. You get that fresh, like, cooking grits kind of smell. You have the pine or the oak from the barrels. You have astringent, high-proof booze. Like, it's an interesting selling space. One that's usually meant and reserved for large outdoor places in Bourbon County is now packed into a little tiny 300-square-foot loft. It can be overwhelming. You know, I'd leave the bar afterwards, and inevitably after 8 hours of hauling barrels around and throwing grain, you're pretty worn out. I was covered in cooked corn or porridge. And I'd wander into a bar, and every time you see that bartender look up and be like, I can smell this man coming. I can't tell if I love it or hate it.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, did you ever get drunk off of the stills from the evaporation?
No.
Okay.
No. We've toyed with it, but no.
That's a huge disappointment. So tell me the experience of going in and making bourbon or making moonshine that you, when you first started making it, what did you learn that you didn't expect to learn that you think is kind of a key technique to good bourbon or good moonshine?
You know, it's been a real fine balance for me, and something that's been, I've had to look at myself and figure out is it's such a technical craft, and at the exact same time, it's such an emotional craft. Over my time there, you're buried in a warehouse in the middle of nowhere, usually by yourself, for 8 to 12, 16 hours, making something. And there's not much of a better connection to something than to just intimately spend time with it. So you're playing music and you're hanging out. And what I didn't realize was how much a factor was of emotion and feelings and moods at the time and, you know, that kind of thing. And how in tune you get with the process. You know, at first you're learning in its numbers and its timing, and by the end of it turns back from a science into a craft, where you don't need those numbers. You have that feeling. You know what's happening on the still. You know the scent and the flavor and the character of the spirit coming off the stills. And I wasn't ready to experience that. I didn't have a way to wrap my mind around that. What I previously thought was so science driven could actually be truly emotionally an art. Like, it was more flexible and forgiving than I ever thought it could be. So it's not something that you can easily wrap your mind around, and explaining that to somebody, even somebody you're training, that you gotta feel what's happening in this room right now so that you can better make a product, is slightly, it's like the most natural thing in the world and the most unnatural thing in the world.
Can you taste a sad bottle of bourbon?
I've tried to do this. I've set aside bottles in batches before that I didn't know what was happening with. whether it was it was a rainy, sad day, and I was playing, you know, some depressing music or something, you know,
Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah, you know, that's what you get down to sometimes. You need it, and you return to those, and you return to the ones where it was like a bright summer day, and you've got just whatever bright music going on, and you're like dancing around the distillery making some bourbon, and you revisit these, and it's hard to tell what influences the flavor, but I'll tell you one thing is a happy distiller makes more product. So
that makes perfect sense, actually. Yeah,
like, you're more efficient, you're cruising around, you're doing things exactly how it should be. The flavor is all over the map because it has to do more with aging and conditions and weather and ingredients and stuff, but efficiency and quality, I'd say, comes better from a happy distiller. So if you're out there, feed and take care of your distiller as well. It makes better booze.
I really wish, yeah. I'd love to get like a playlist of people's music while they're making it. Like, what would happen if someone was playing Limp Bizkit? Like, it would just be really
like some angry, yeah, hardcore booze.
Corn or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right.
I can't even imagine. But you know, I've heard from people, like from, you know, Pappy Van Winkle and even Kings County, you know, different folks talk about heat and location of barrels. Do you think that hat plays a lot into the flavor? And
oh, I mean, big time. I look at just something like sticking a barrel on the coast in Scotland where it's cold, and you get that salty air versus what we're doing, which is a Brooklyn loft. Which is actually regulated. You know, we have an AC in there, and we have a heater, and we keep it fairly consistent. Eventually, we were so consistent that we had to stop that. We had to, like, leave windows open or leave barrels out in the sun just to get some deeper flavor and some variation and everything. So it matters. There's a terroir to spirits, which I think has been wildly debated before, because you're not talking earth tones of, like, grapes and climate, but considering how much of the process of aging spirits flavors them, you know, we're talking 80-90% coming from the barrel and how they sit in it, that it's inevitable that environment plays a big role. We can see that big time here because we use only local ingredients, but how different the barrels can be. And we've moved. Kings County now resides in the Navy Yard, and I'm sure the product that comes out of there is going to be ever so different from than what was made in a little tiny loft.
Talk a little bit about moonshine. You know, moonshine is something that I think, especially on the East Coast, it's emerging in terms of popularity, but in terms of diversity on the East Coast compared to a place like Kentucky or even right. Mississippi, you know, we don't have as much as other spots. Could you describe what makes a good moonshine to you? What does it taste like? What qualities and characteristics are you looking right. for?
Well, you know, moonshine is such an interesting term just because it's been thrown around so readily, especially over the last few years. You know, moonshine. Moonshine is a spirit that is being made by somebody who shouldn't be making it, who makes it, you know, possibly in their bathtub, definitely in some woods somewhere, and is bottling it for their friends. That's moonshine. Right now, I take moonshine really to mean, you know, a spirit that hasn't been aged. And it's got to be from corn, you know, or really whatever you can get your hands on to make it. But I see it as being a corn product mixed with whatever random grain you can put in there. But what I'm looking for is for a moonshine to show character. You know, what do you want to do? It's not ever seeing wood, so it's not taking the flavors of wood. It's not taking your traditional flavor components. It's literally able to highlight what you're making. And as long as it's able to like capture that, like literally you want to taste the corn that comes from New York, upper New York State in this, because that's what it is. Might as well be a wine for that sake. You know, it's made from that and then it's unaltered. So I'm looking for flavors of where it comes from, like of what it represents. Ours has awesome corn and citrus notes and oatmeal, and it's easy to use. But it doesn't have to be that.
And it's sanitary. That's a positive of Kings County Moonshine. It doesn't have a, you know, Uncle Pappy's bathtub remnants in it. So,
yeah, well, yeah, clean. Bonus. Yeah. It's made, it's almost too proper. You know what I mean? It's been taken care of.
Yeah, which it's delicious. And when we get back from our break, we're going to do a live tasting of some of these booze. But stay tuned, because we've got more from Tristan Willie of Booker and Dax. I'm already drunk. You're getting me drunk over here. And you're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You can now hear all of the shows on Heritage Radio Network while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, and no memory or storage wasted. Available on your iPhone, iPad, Android phones, and beyond. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
You're listening to How Long Do I Have to Wait by Sharon Jones and the Dab Kings.
I need a new computer. I guess I'm going to have to go to the Apple Store.
What? Don't go to the Apple Store. Go to TechServe.
What's TechServe? I thought Apple Store was the only choice.
No, you're crazy. TechServe is so much better than the Apple Store. They're New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. Plus, the store is really cool. You got to go check it out. They're located at 119 West 23rd Street.
Well, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
TechServe is a proud sponsor of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. For more information, visit TechServe.com. That's TechServe.com.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I am still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined by Tristan Willie of Booker and Dax
Bar. There it
is. Yes, before the break, I was temporarily intoxicated. And yeah, we're going to get into some drinking, because we're both really good at that. We're going to try. What are we trying? What are we drinking?
I brought along, since we've been talking about it, some Kings County spirits. Let's I got both the moonshine and the bourbon.
Awesome.
So I say we just dive right in.
Let's do it.
Do you want some moonshine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
So it's essentially the same thing. You know, it's the product that eventually is going to see wood and turn into bourbon. There's a slight flip on ratios of grain in there, but, you know, it's very similar.
Exhaled fire into the microphone, and my eyebrows are lit on fire from, oh my god, that is strong. You know, I just tried, they had the chocolate moonshine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm tasting that just because I think by association,
right? It
is
takes you
crazy?
Right back there. You're like, oh right, yeah, dark chocolate, dry, but no, it's not in there.
Yep,
it's just corn.
It's just corn. Mm. Yeah. So whew, it's good. I never know how to describe moonshine, honestly.
No.
That moonshine.
No. You can't really describe any moonshine until you try. Going into distilling, I didn't like moonshine. Like, there's not a cause for me to like moonshine. Mm-hmm. Drinking it now, I love it. Like, I return to it. I'm like, I need some moonshine right now. Like, those flavors are, you can't get them anywhere else because they're all covered up. Now at the bar, like first bottles we wanted to, was like, I need to have these on the shelf. And so I find myself going to, at the end of the night and being like, you know what? I think I'm gonna work with this. I think I'm gonna go straight for the moonshine.
So. Yeah. Do you have anything on the menu right now that includes the moonshine?
You know, we don't right now. Surprisingly, it is a challenging thing to work with, and I'm somewhat biased as you know, as I've seen this individual product like come to fruition. It's hard for me to mix it with things. I want people to sit there and be like, you got to try this, you know, versus, this is a little bit of moonshine and Campari and, you know, some kind of sweet vermouth and, you know, that kind of thing. I'm like, you know, let it stand and talk for itself. It's a cool local product. People should try it.
So how would you, in a perfect world, how would you serve it? Like on ice, straight up, or?
I sip it neat, but you throw it on some ice and cool it down. It's great. I am still figuring out moonshine. I say this like I know what I'm talking about, but after a year and a half of working with it, I'm trying to tame the beast, you know?
No, it's got a lot going on, but it's definitely like a quick punch in terms of flavor.
Yeah.
Which yeah. I like. I like that kind of spirit. So, okay. And then what are we trying?
Well, we got to follow it up naturally with the aged version. So this is seen wood for 9 to 12 months. It's been stuck away either in the Navy Yard or in our little loft, and has finally come together. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
mm-hmm.
That is good. Talk about the barrels, because the barrels are pretty cool.
Barrels are cool. All my friends, we've always touted Coopers to be the manliest of manly. Like, they are men among men. Like, if you're a barrel cooper, you're like, hats off, sir. You probably have a giant beard and muscles that grow out of muscles. And I'm sure you only ever wear overalls. But they're like, if I could be something, like, if you were to grow up, you'd be like, I want to be a cooper. Those guys do such cool things. Like, they bend wood, and they bend metal, and they use fire to gut the whole thing out. And with highly regarded secrets. Like, nobody knows how they do what they do unless they want you to know. And Bass Coopers, maybe that's the next adventure, I'm thinking.
Is being
a cooper.
So, yeah. Just, well,
it's just come to me here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the barrel themselves have to be made out of American oak, and they have to be unused, charred to a certain degree of your choosing, and then they're filled. They're filled with this high proof alcohol and set aside to do their thing. That matures in our little barrels that we started out using in about 9 to 12 months, depending on the weather, depending on what went into them, the quality of it, that kind of thing. So it's a constant taste kind of thing. But yeah, they sit there and the spirit works in and out, and it gets that charred caramely flavor, and it brings in all the tannins from the wood and sugars. And it's a really cool process, because, you know, any brown spirit you've ever had has seen wood. And that's where it gets so much of its character and depth from, that the barrel is what matters. I mean, the barrel is making the product. I'm not going to take much away from the spirit and say that, you know, you can't forget about that. But these guys who you don't even really know are crafting something that crafts your product. And I think it's really cool. It's a really neat process.
I want to shift gears slightly and, you know, just kind of get a sense from you of where you think the cocktail world is at now versus even 5 years ago.
Oh. Well, I'm new to this, you know. It's I've been kind of thrown into the deep end, and luckily just had awesome people around to keep me afloat. So it's figuring out these trends and looking at what all these other wonderful mature bartenders who know what's going on are doing is always kept me guessing, learning. Right now, I mean, from what I've seen, people are beginning to expect good drinks. They're numerous enough now, and there's establishments everywhere around the city who know better. They can craft you something that is gonna be good and original and made with the right ingredients. You can go into awesome restaurants that you would never expect to even think about this kind of thing, you know, and find beautiful Amaro-driven cocktails. And you're going, I don't even remember seeing an Amaro bottle outside of a cocktail bar within the last, like, year. And I feel like it's cropping up. quickly that you can get a good drink anywhere. And so now with this demand, you're starting to see these cool casual cocktail bars, or just good old bars. I'm talking beer bars, who can now whip up a beautiful craft cocktail. And so I kind of like that. I mean, it's somewhat intimidating to know that this is, you know, it's getting a little bit competitive out there, but to be able to walk into a bar and get either a great beer or a phenomenal cocktail is awesome. And I think it's headed that way. Approachable, good drinking. Everybody spends their time at the farmers markets nowadays. There's innovation going on and collaboration between all the big, you know, big players and little players. You know, it doesn't matter. It's all working together. But I think the time of the approachable cocktail bar and the approachable bar is coming to a head. So
what are you really psyched about drinking right now? Like on your night off, what are you drinking? Maybe you're not even drinking cocktails. Maybe you're drinking beer.
Well, I do. One of the fallouts of now running a bar is I had spent enough time looking at spirits and enough time looking at, you know, that kind of side of things that I had kind of neglected or forgotten beer existed. And I adore beer and I love it. And, you know, we've homebrewed and that kind of stuff, but there's so much out there to learn, just the same as there is in the spirits world. And diving back in to beer has been a real treat. It's a nice escape from spirits. And it keeps my love of spirits alive by letting me go out and have other flavors that are refreshing, easy, or hard. You know, that's what you're going to find me drinking. So I'm looking to beer right now in big way.
So Budweiser is your go-to.
Budweiser,
right?
Is what I go to. No, you know, my favorite day at the bar is when we have a beer distributor who comes in who carries some really fun challenging beers, and she'll come and drop a little six pack off, and you never know what's going to be in it. And you realize I get to take those home and sit there and be like, do I like this? You know, is this something that could maybe make it on the menu? It's really challenging work.
It's so hard.
But to try out the world of flavors, I mean, you have amazing things happening from Maryland right now, of course Belgium, like, and everything in between around the globe, and it's all coming together. And so I can find the six pack and be like, oh, what's Japan got to offer right now? And it's so fun, it's so wild. It just brings a whole nother side of things to my previously kind of focused world that I'm just really digging right now.
Now you used to work in the running world. Were you a hardcore runner?
Yeah, I mean, as hardcore as you can be. I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky guy, but we've been in the running community for a while. We ran through high school and into college, and in Albuquerque, where I'm from, is one of the running capitals of the world. So I'm proud to say that, you know, we had four roommates in the Olympics over the last 2 weeks.
Whoa.
Which is, go guys, by the way, if I haven't said hi to you. Wow. Congrats. And so it gets a little hardcore. Me and my current roommate here in New York, who lived with me also in New Mexico, got a little bit sidetracked from all this by decided one summer just to go ahead and be a correspondent for a website called FlowTrack. And we got in our little Honda Accord and chased our roommates and ran all over the country, going to track meets and doing that kind of thing. Ended up covering the Olympic trials at one point, and it was just another obsession. But, you know, it was definitely a way into the spirits world, because runners, I tell you, drink.
I was just going to ask, like, after you go do a big marathon, I've heard sometimes people will just drink a big beer. It's got all the calorie intake that you need. And
a big beer or 10.
Or 10, yeah.
You know, runners, and when you're training, you're burning 10,000 calories a day. I mean, you're just ripping through meals. And so you can just go at it without regret.
So super muscly, skinny people just being like, you know, your prem is at the end of the race. That sounds great.
Oh, I know. It's awesome. Because also at that point, you know, about a beer gets the job done. and they're not stopping at a beer. So it's always an entertaining after party. Yeah.
So real quick before we have to leave, what should people be drinking at Booker and Dax right now?
Oh, man. Okay. Get the apple drink. You know, it's a various name. It's on the bottom of the menu. You'll see it when you go in there. There's nothing better than drinking seasonally and knowing that you're going to be there. It's the only time that drink's going to be there. And then you're going to come back and you're not going to have another shot for it. But go with the classics. Get the anything carbonated right now while it's still a little hot is so refreshing. So I'd look that direction.
I'm going to go running 20 miles and then I'm going to come have a drink. It's going to be amazing.
Deal. I'll bring the stretcher.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, thanks for having me.
And people can check out more about you on your amazing website. Do you have a website?
I don't have a website.
You don't have
a website.
I should
have a website.
I lied.
Go to Momofuku.
Okay. Yes.
Booker and Dax.
Or at Booker and Dax as well. Yeah. And thanks to Jack Inslee, Joe Galarraga, and the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio and Roberta's. I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.